All right, so good morning, everyone. I think people will start trickling in as we kind of get started. But without further ado, as we start every meeting, we'll start with the antitrust policy notice and code of conduct. Please take a look. It is easily accessible on our social impact wiki page right here on the side. And if you want to click into it, and you can read it other times too. So just to quickly get started, is there anyone that's interested in taking meeting notes? And if not, I understand. So if we could, just to get started, just have everyone on the call quickly introduce and as well as announce who they are. Jim, do you want to get started?
Yeah, sure. My name is Jim Couples, and I'm the CEO of Terrapin Data, and our lead product is All the Farms. I'll be talking about that today.
Thanks, Jim.
Sure.
I see someone is listed as 1-540-848-3552.
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you now.
Yes, Sean Wilborn. This is actually my first call. I'm a student at the University of Miami School of Law, and I've just been on the email chains for a little while. But I wanted to check in, and I saw on the agenda that All the Farms was on here, and I'm big into waste waste and water are sort of my two sectors. But I guess particularly for this instance, I'm trying to see how we can sort of see where All the Farms is offering, and try to implement some composting and some biodigesting down here in the South Florida area. So just listening in and seeing what insight I can sort of glean from the conversation. So
thank you so much for joining, Sean. If you're interested, we also have a lot of ongoing initiatives. And you're welcome to connect with Jim as well.
Okay, perfect. Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. Welcome.
Hi, great. Thank you. This is Lindsay Nguyen, the founder and CEO of Empirical and of Women of Color in Blockchain. I basically wear multiple hats. I also do some adjunct professor teaching in the University of New Hampshire School of Law's blockchain certificate program around data privacy and security for blockchain. And good morning, everyone.
Karen, do you want to go next?
Sure. So I'm Karen Ottoni. I am part of Hyperledger staff, and I'm the point of contact for the social impact SIG. So here to be a support to help build and engage this community. I do have actually a little bit of an announcement that I'll just do real quick. I actually am going to be going on maternity leave soon. So this will probably be my last call for a little while in the Social Impact SIG. But another one of my colleagues on the Hyperledger team, ecosystem team, will be assigned and start joining the calls. So we haven't decided yet who it is. It's going to be either Marta Pikarska or David Boswell. And many of you may already be familiar with them. But they'll probably be on the next call.
Congratulations, Karen.
Thank you.
Congrats. I think we also have Maj.
Maj, would you like to introduce yourself? Oh, he's gone.
All right, so I guess we'll move on then. So thank you, everyone. And just to quickly introduce myself as well, my name is Nancy Mann. I'm the chair of the Social Impact Special Interest Group. I'm really excited to work with you guys. I'm also, one of my other hats is I'm also the CEO of Echelon. So We're also using Hyperledger products to develop peer-to-peer transactional energy platform. So just to move on quickly, one of the administrative things that we had actually started over the summer was developing a survey, and we got the survey results. And one of the things that was, I think, noted that the group wanted to work on were different types of work streams and projects, focusing specifically on white papers, use cases, best practices, as well as kind of liaisons working with the Hyperledger community. And so just to kind of quickly review this again, so this was kind of the three sections. One thing that we would like to do is to identify leads for each of the work streams. And the main goal is with the leads is to kind of facilitate the different work streams and all the team members that have signed up for the different projects. One thing is also, you know, if you guys have any topics, ideas, projects that you guys would like to kind of move forward on or get the ideas out there, and you know, we're welcome to post them onto each of the specific work stream pages. And we also have like the project titles, you know, and project description, different statuses, and whoever's interested in that. So is there anyone who's interested right now in some of the and leading some of the different work stream? I can kind of hear a pin drop. Lindsay, is that something that you'd be interested in, or Jim, or anyone else?
I'm sorry, can you say that again? That you cut out a little bit. Which work stream?
Oh, so we have three work streams, and we're looking to kind of identify leads. Is there anyone that you're interested in potentially leading?
Are they listed there? I'm switching between. I'm on my mobile, so I can't see the screen.
Oh, no worries. So there's three. So there's the white papers. So facilitating kind of drafting the different white papers. There's also research focusing on use cases and best practices, and there's also community liaison.
Well, Lindsay has put her name down to be on the research and community liaison, but not on the white paper one. So,
yep. Okay.
But I mean, only if you're interested. Don't feel pressured right now.
Yeah.
No. Those two still
join as well. So, he's also on the line.
Hi, Dre.
It looks like his audio might not be set up yet.
Okay, that's fine. I'll add him to the meeting list. But so no pressure for right now, but if you guys are interested, feel free to kind of plop your name in there onto the wiki page. So one thing that I did put in there in the use cases and best practices, I think one thing that would be great potentially would be to highlight the different type of blockchain implementations that are currently going on in social impact. So I will take the lead on that one to build out an outline for that. But if you guys are interested in kind of helping out with that, I would really appreciate any help possible.
All right. I think you have to add yourself as part of that group then, Nancy.
I guess I will do that. Awesome. Let me add Dre. Is it not? All right, I'll do it later. Awesome. Anyway, so moving on, one of the other things was the Hyperledger Global Forum. I think I saw in there, and Karen, can you confirm that the deadline to submit a talk or any workshop or something like that has been extended to this Friday?
Yes, it has.
Okay, awesome. So if you guys are still interested in not only applying but also submitting a talk, feel free to do that. I still have some time there.
Jen, I did see some chatter about an interactive sort of submission or something like that. Can you like back brief everyone on like what is that, what the group is submitting, or maybe Karen has more info on it?
Yeah, Karen, do you know this?
No, I don't. I'm not sure what you're referring to, Lindsay. No one in this group has, I think, taken the initiative to submit something. So,
okay.
But you're welcome to do it for your own organization, or get a group within the SIG that may want to do, and there's a list there of the different kinds of talks, so you can do a panel discussion, put together a social impact panel, do a presentation, a demo. So you're welcome to do that. The link's right there, and yeah, the deadline's on this Friday. I don't think it'll be extended again, so definitely try and get it in by this Friday.
Okay.
I see Jim saying here in the chat that he might be interested in doing a talk if you want to work together.
Yeah, that's correct. After I give the presentation, if there's some stuff that resonates, we can connect and see if we can do something.
That sounds good.
I think putting together a panel would be interesting for as sort of a SIG. Type of talk, because then you could have several people from the SIG talking about a topic that you will select that makes sense for social impact.
Yeah, I think it also, I like that format, Karen. I think it gives us a bit of a good layup into a broader sort of swath of use cases that people are covering. If maybe a few people in the SIG talk about projects they're leading in the space. And since Nancy is leading the use case sort of track, it might give her the opportunity to speak to it at a higher level and then pinpoint how other people can get involved.
Definitely, I think that sounds great. So Lindsay, Jim, and Karen, whoever else is interested, we can do a call or something like that offline this week. Try to get it in before Friday and report on that. Does that sound good?
Yeah, happy to do that. And I can maybe just spitball, if you want, spitball some ideas via email so we don't lose any time. I don't know what the submission form is like for this one, but usually sometimes they're pretty lengthy, so I don't want us to lose any valuable time, if at all possible.
That sounds great. So great. That would be great. And then one of the things we definitely want to kind of go over are some of the different past events that have happened over the last 2 weeks. So I think, Lindsay, you mentioned that you went to the ID 2020. Did you go?
No, I didn't get a chance to go to ID 2020, but I did get a chance to go to the GBVC SDG Hackathon. With a group of about three other folks from the Hyperledger community. And I can speak a little bit to that if you'd like.
Yes, please. That'd be great.
Great. So we went with the intention of really, forming a very tight-knit Hyperledger team that leveraged, some of the tools and frameworks in the greenhouse against the SDGs, but the format and sort of the arrangement of the hackathon was much more dynamic than we expected. So instead of forming one team, we each got placed across about three different teams and were able to contribute. So there, was definitely a silver lining to that, because instead of taking, one award home, we actually took home three. So two second place placings, and then Matt and his team that focused their solution around how to combat waste, I think it was, or maybe they focused on the hunger SDG. I'm not sure, but they won first place. They went to the, won the $10,000 prize. And the GBVC sort of organizers and all the sponsors across the World Food Program and Procter & Gamble were extremely interested across all of the winners, again, first and second place winners, in really, really continuing the conversation and seeing where we take these solutions. So I'll keep you guys abreast as things evolve and then see if there's any sort of interoperability or cross-platform plays where we can really rope sort of the Hyperledger tools into showcase in a much more prominent way. But the whole team was there. We had a great time. We were able to really, really, you know, dig into some of the sponsor tools that were available to us, like Quorum, and I believe a few of the other team might have leveraged Ethereum in their design. But we're really excited to see where these go after the hackathon. I think that, as the sponsor said, you know, it's much more about the continuing work that needs to be done and less about the actual, just the weekend. So we've got some great energy coming out of that event and super excited to continue to share out with you guys how it progresses.
Thank you so much. And Lindsay, that's extremely exciting. That we took them three awards. I'm really excited about that, though. also, Lindsay, did you find any photos of it?
I'm sorry, did I go where?
Did you take any photos of the event, like just any of the hacks?
I did. There are a few photos that I took, and so I'll post those up for the group so everybody can kind of you know, take a peek at the action and what went down that weekend. I'll post it for the group. Maybe I'll just send it directly to you, Nancy, and you can post it.
Sure. Sounds great. Thank you.
Great. No problem. You're welcome.
So for the next one is the SDG Action Zone program. I think this was actually sent to us through our mailing list. Did anyone attend this event?
All right. I was actually at ID 2020.
You were? Oh.
Yeah. Awesome. I ended up being on a panel there on interoperability. It was really interesting. It was the first time I'd been to ID 2020. And, you know, there's definitely a real core group of identity people that was there. I did see Rick and Elisa briefly. Matt Davies from Kiva, who presented about a month ago about the Kiva Digital Identity Program in Sierra Leone, was also there as well. And let's see, in terms of the presentations, it was really good, some really good keynotes. You know, one was from this man, this academic. I don't know his name, but you can find him on Netflix. There's a documentary that he was involved in called The Great Hack. And the reason is because he is the only one who actually brought a successful lawsuit against Cambridge Analytica for what they did in the election. And so he obviously has a lot of close experience with personal data issues. And so it was a really interesting talk by him. One thing that ID 2020 is launching is certifications of programs or of technologies. I'm actually not sure if they're going to certify technologies or if they're going to certify actual programs. I think it might be programs. But they're planning on launching that. So that would mean that they would have some sort of evaluation for some digital identity projects, and they would be like ID 2020 certified as a project that follows some rules and standards that they've established. So that's a new thing that they've launched.
Great. I think it would definitely be useful to follow kind of their program.
Hey, Karen, just I don't know if you have a finger on the pulse with this or not, but a lot of the teams, I know you hit on interoperability, and it was a question and sort of a theme at the GBBC event as well. Do you have a finger on the pulse of how things are going with BASU?
With BASU?
No, but BASU. It's the new interoperability.
Oh yeah, BASU.
Yeah, BASU.
BASU is a project that just was contributed to Hyperledger. It's a code base that was developed by the Pegasus team at ConsenSys. It's an Ethereum client. It's a full stack protocol that is a permission version of Ethereum, but can also connect with the public network as well. It's brand new, so it's like basically a month old in Hyperledger, but it has already been in production for a while, so it's already reached a 1.0 status prior to joining Hyperledger. But your question, I think, about interoperability, in terms of it connecting, do you mean with the other Hyperledger frameworks?
That's correct.
Yeah, so some of the other Hyperledger frameworks can already accept Ethereum smart contracts and transactions. So Fabric and Sawtooth, and if you were on the call with Chris Ferris, was that the last call?
Yep.
Yeah, so on the last call, we had Chris Ferris from the Fabric community. He presented on Fabric, and you can watch the recording of that. And so he talked about how Fabric accepts EVM transactions, and the reason is we had another project called Hyperledger Burrow in our community for a while, and they were a permissioned smart contract EVM. Burrow connected with Fabric and Sawtooth Theory. So both those two can already accept Ethereum smart contracts. And so that was something that already existed with those in terms of how BASU is going to connect to the other frameworks, that's something that is part of the plan. If you go to I'll just show you here on the screen. If you go to Hyperledger main wiki page there where the Hyperledger logo is on the wiki that Nancy has on the screen, and you click on BASU, you can see their proposal, and it talks about their goals, and their goals do state how much they want to connect with the community, but there is no sort of back and forth interoperability connection just yet between them.
Okay, thanks for that update. It's helpful.
And if you want to learn more about BASU, checking the page on the wiki is good. Also going on hyperledger.org and going to our blog and reading the announcement of the project is it just gives a good overview as well.
Awesome. And also, Lindsay, just to add to that, I think there was a lot of discussion on the technical steering committee mailing list about the BASU project, and I believe they discussed it in one of the meetings. So if you want to look at the recordings there, I think they talked a little bit about how they're going to go about with the interoperability.
Which one is that in?
I think it's, I need to check my emails, but I think there's like a mailing list for the technical steering committee. And if you add yourself to that, they talk, there were some email chatter about Bezu and how, you know, there were a couple of thoughts that were thrown around.
Okay, cool. The technical steering committee group. I'll definitely check that out.
Mm-hmm. I'll put it in the chat so you can find it.
Thanks, Karen. So for the upcoming events, I think we have the Yukio conference in Osaka on October 7th. Is anyone attending that? We also have the San Francisco Blockchain Week that's partnered with Techstars. I don't know if anyone has signed up to be a judge, coach, or sponsor for the event, but we did have someone present on it two meetings ago, I believe. Are there any other upcoming events that you guys are looking at or interested?
By the way, I do think Rick is going to Ukiyo, and we will have Marta from Hyperledger who will be there as well. It's a kind of social impact focused conference that's alongside DEF CON.
Mm-hmm. Any other ones? Awesome. All right, so without further ado, we're at the 10:30 mark, so that's perfect. So Jim today will be our presenter, presenting about all the farms. Oh, sorry guys. I don't know why it won't let me leave this. So Jim, would you like for me to drive your presentation, or do you want to drive on your own? I can give you the host.
Oh, if you give me the host, that'd be great. And I will
You just have screen. He just has to share his screen. The host is just for the recording.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So y'all can see my screen now?
Yep.
Wonderful. Let me see if I can.
Ah, really.
Great. Excellent. So good morning, everybody. My name is Jim Couples, and I'm going to talk to you about a data project on local farms and regenerative agriculture and how it ended up with blockchain or in blockchain in that format and me kind of entering that world. So there were really three big problems that we saw, and they're ones that we're probably familiar with. The first one is it's difficult to support our local farms. And I would say that's not only a logistic thing, that starts off with information, right? We really can't ask for local farms until we understand who they are. So we've got to be able to say to that supermarket, hey, I want to see these carrots from Couples Farm on the shelf here, or something like that, but we have to, you know, inform people on that. And that actually goes to the second thing of being on blockchain. Most of us, you know, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, but it's a great tool for transmitting information. And it shouldn't just be any old information. It should be information where there's a degree of mistrust. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I felt that. And I'll just do a quick aside and tell a story. Back in November or so of last year, I was at an ag tech event in Fargo, North Dakota. And we were talking, most of them were commodity farmers, wheat, soybeans, things like that. And I was there, you know, talking about my project and everything. And I was stereotyped with my Oregon lifestyle as eating organic and everything else. And the farmers that I would talk to there said, like, how do you know it's organic? How do you know you just didn't, you know, they're just saying they're organic. And are you telling me that these small stores are actually going to question the stickers and everything else? And so there's a degree of mistrust in the food chain, and that's where having information on blockchain warrants it, because there is suspicion of how something is grown and under what conditions. The last thing is climate change is happening now, and our food system is changing right before our eyes. You could see that especially in the spring, where we were 30% down on our corn production, and the reason for that was too much rain. Too much rain too soon didn't allow the tractors that most of those larger farms had to get out into the fields until weeks later. So our corn production is behind. That is something that's not going away. So whether it's today, tomorrow, and going forward, we're going to be talking about the climate crisis. And it will continue to be more closely associated with how we eat and the and how that's not only how we eat, how it impacts the climate by releasing carbon into the air through generally big farms. And I can go more into that a little bit later. But it's not just that we're changing the environment, but there's a direct impact of that where our supply chains are changing. Where we grow, what we grow, and when we grow is changing. And I am not cherry-picking events. This happens nationally. This is an article less than a week old. There's the New York Times talking about San Joaquin Valley. And they're talking about, you know, how producers have to move around for climate change. And at the same time, you just have to go up to little old New Hampshire and Pioneer Valley, and they'll tell you the same thing. So that's real. That's involved with our agriculture system. And if we're talking about logistics, you know, we have to be prepared for that. If those things are going to be changing, well, by its very nature, the data changes on who's growing what's available, and that type of information. So our solution, what we came up with at All the Farms, was we consider it more of a lightweight information problem. And I say lightweight because I believe it demands a smaller team than is normally thrown at this type of stuff. And it's really information-based. So what we most have to do is help people understand what is available around them that's regenerative and sustainable. And at the same time, on the flip side of that, is we have to help farmers and ranchers present their products. If they're local, they're already being squeezed for prices. So consolidating their information and putting it in one spot allows them to reach a wider market. And just due to how the economics are in tech nowadays, you know, the work we can do in 2019 and going forward on a 3-4 person team, I would say, you know, 10 years ago was, you know, 20-30 people. And I'm old. I'm 45. So I speak from experience. So here's All the Farms right now. And we just changed some stuff. So I'm a little bit hung up on my imports. But later on today, there'll be 1,000 farms. I know there's someone on here from Florida who I'm excited to talk with. I'll be loading up a bunch of farms in Fort Myers, where I am, in Miami, and all over. But for right now, it's pretty accurate for Oregon. And it works like this, if you guys haven't seen it. Just enter an address here. And I can search, and of course it shows everything. But to me, the thing that we do that's different and that presents value is allowing people to actually search on farming practices. And I have to do a better probably job explaining this to the public. You know, our information might be before the marketing and a good information campaign. But we organize the information according to these categories. And whenever you're talking about regenerative agriculture, which is agriculture that's leaving the soil better than it was before, or at least at the same level, whenever we're talking about these categories are the ones that matter. And I would say the biggest one is no-till. So instead of just putting out all farms out there, of course, we allow you to search by products. But the thing that I'm most excited about is the farming practices. Others, it might be this. You know, hey, who doesn't love to you pick this time of year? You know, apples, grapes, and things like that. But we're the social impact crew. So we're going to talk about regenerative agriculture and those things that further help society. So I can just simply search on no-till and enter where I live, Springfield, Oregon, or Portland, Oregon, wherever. Right now I'm visiting my parents in Fort Myers, Florida. And there it shows me all the farms that are practicing no-till, reduced till, which of course means putting that plow less into the ground and releasing less carbon into the air and allowing your soil to the microsystem to really flourish. So you don't want to disturb that. So anyway, you can just, this is how the site works. You just enter your address, you'll see all this. We could have searched on products. This is the stuff that I think is really important, the farming practices, and talking about that, allowing people to select for that, and as well where to buy. Now we don't have we don't monetize this, right? Like there's no attachment for me to get 20% of something here, 20% of something there, because that's putting the cart before the horse. The first thing we have to do is be willing to inform people. And that takes, you know, putting yourself out on a limb a little bit. Anyway, there's the Facebook page, Instagram page, all this type of data, as you can see on this, is stuff that we collect. And then we also try to give credit to where we got that information, because there's all these types of regional places that help you. But we found value in presenting or consolidating that information and making it address searchable and amending it with our own data. So that's been our solution. So the data challenge when we're talking about this stuff is, it's really the quality of the data, right? That's what we really, and getting the data in the first place. So how can we find this data? Whenever I present to a tech audience, the answer is scraping. And scraping is not the answer. You know, and I can tell you that because prior to this, I had worked on other data projects. There's a thing, and I'll show it a little bit later, called runforoffice.org. And I co-founded that and worked on that for 4 years and built it up. And you just can't solve data problems by just piling data on. We're looking for needles in haystack or maybe something bigger. But when you're just scraping data, you're just adding hay to the haystack. And you're not adding value to anyone. You're not doing something with that product. And I would feel, you know, making good use of your time and your labor if you're just not doing anything else, you're just grabbing something via scraping. So we don't do scraping. This is something that's got to be, for the beginning, it's got to be shovel to ground to do this. So who can do this work? Well, me, you, and everyone else. I know that this information is really easy to, this information is easy to get onto sites because you can see it already done. I can find this information on Facebook, on Instagram. It's really just a matter of consolidating it. So people are on top of entering data that's relevant that makes a site like mine run. And the last thing is, what is the cost? Well, everyone asks that. And that's where you go out on a limb. And the cost right now is we pay people in Eugene, Oregon. And we're here at the Social Impact Group, so I don't mind telling you, we pay them a minimum of $15 an hour, and it would be more than that if I were in a different state. But I don't mind that. That's money that we have budgeted. You know, we pay people per farm, and we check the accuracy of it. But what we intend to happen is at a certain point, you create enough value that farms start to enter their own data. And if I can go back, I can show you that on our site, we actually, sorry, I'm losing my spot. But we have a spot on our site where farms can enter their own farm or claim their own farm, or people can enter their own farm. So the intention is to seed this site with enough information that it encourages others to add their own. I got ahead of myself a little bit here. Let me just go back to reiterate that point. So there is a cost. There's an upfront cost on collecting and consolidating this data. And there's a gamble that you're going to be able to build some type of community that cares about this type of stuff, that cares about regenerative agriculture, that's close, and as well, not only the people community, but a business community to support that. And that doesn't mean, there's a lot of ways that can happen. So how does that question of understanding what our local farms are and regenerative agriculture play into blockchain? Well, I work in data, and prior to this, I'd worked in political data. And so the big thing that happened that I was watching was last September, almost 12 months ago, was the announcement that probably a lot of us were aware of. And I was aware of blockchain before that and knew a lot of its angles. But when I saw this was when I understood, hey, if I'm working in agriculture data, I've got to have it presentable to the business community. I've got to understand this format that other people are using. So that was hinted to me at this announcement with Walmart. And that was followed up less than a month later with Frank Giannis, who led that system at Walmart, being hired at the FDA. So there, it didn't take, you know, the great Kreskin to understand that there was going to be someone was going to the FDA with a background in blockchain, and their signature project that they had worked on. And Frank Giannis, I'm very admiring of him. I think he's terrific. But his big signature thing was bringing IBM and Walmart together for the Global Food Trust and on blockchain. So understanding Walmart's demand for data being in blockchain and seeing what the FDA and USDA, the kind of signals that they were putting out there, it made it very, very clear to me that I'd had to understand this new format, which I hadn't been working in much beforehand with political data, but that was going to be relevant going forward. So how I see my role in our community is not a very glamorous one. I consider myself someone that tries to build foundational data sets without sounding too pretentious, but I guess foundational in being basic as a self-effacing term. So we don't do hardware with sensors or things like that. You know, what we consider to set up is to build that core piece of data that you're going to need to build off of. The first thing you have to understand is that a farm exists or not, right? That's number one, that a farm exists somewhere. And then it's the name, and then contact information, and what they're growing, and then their growing practices. And that type of stuff is exactly the type of information that we collect. And we thought that there would be further value on in blockchain. So we understood that, and that's how I still see our role. And I use the term grid because, let me see if I can get back to that slide. I use the term grid because I had done some stuff that was similar. So this was the previous project that I had worked on, and this is just a very big political database. It has every school board position in the country and everything else. And what people did with this data was they built other tools on it. So I created this baseline of data that said these elected officials are attached to these political boundary maps. And then for my purpose, I try to encourage people to run for office and show that, you know, their next election date and their filing window and how to do that. But other people built different tools. So Ballotpedia, they use that information to further get their school board information further. You know, that was specifically the type of data they were licensing to us from us. But my point being is that I understood that there was a value in establishing kind of a grid work of data that others could build off of. And since we're talking about logistics, it had to be in blockchain. So I needed allies. I am someone who worked in data and understood blockchain just really from the high level, but not well. But I live in Oregon, and that's not far from Oregon State University. And Oregon State University had done a great project with Intel, who also has a really big presence in the state of Oregon. I believe they're headquartered in the Bay Area, but there's a heck of a lot of them in Portland and around Oregon. So that's a good thing. You know, geography is destiny. And I understood that Oregon State University ran our Ag Extension Program, which is the state-funded network of agriculture and ranching resources that just about every land-grant university in the country takes part of. So naturally, Oregon State University, through their agriculture program and at logistics, had an interest in blockchain, and Intel was, of course, working on Hyperledger, and specifically Hyperledger Sawtooth, and they did this wonderful project where, and you all should check this out, I can send you this link. It's a great PDF, and you'll see where they really detail how they worked with this blueberry farm, and we tracked it in Oregon from the field all the way to the customer. So that was good. And that was, you know, in this period, it was really just about finding allies. So there was my institutional allies, but they weren't going to do any of the work for me. And blockchain is difficult. You know, you're going to have to understand code and have some familiarity. And so just by using our local Slack there in Eugene, Oregon, which is right next to the University of Oregon, I found Dan Keith, who had formerly, after I posted this in our Eugene Tech Community Slack channel, and he had mentioned that he was going to be back, and that he had blockchain experience. So my job was to entice Dan to work for free and get him to work on Sawtooth, as well as prepare that data for him as best I could and bring him aboard. And that's what he did over the summer. So Dan worked with us over the summer. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting a message here. I hope that's, there's nothing wrong with anything. Oh, thanks, Karen. So it was necessary to bring Dan Keith along because he brought the blockchain experience that we needed. And that was just simply by reaching out to the community and finding him. But the most exciting part about the past few months for me in blockchain has been finding the lateral applications for everything. And we all know that blockchain is excellent for logistics and it's wonderful for payment. I think those are probably the two things that they're best known for, or from, you know, my bubble. That's where we really talk about them. But there, what I was really interested in was the value we could add to the 20-acre farm that is 10 years away from getting sensors on it. Is there a use case for that small farm and for these other people that were doing regenerative agriculture? And yeah, we think we found those. And that was by continuing to recruit people to this effort. Now, this was back in the spring of 2019, when I was going through an accelerator at Oregon State University for this project. And I asked them to find me an MBA that would be interested in this project. And that brought aboard Rachel Hankins. Rachel wasn't just an MBA who'd recently graduated, but her day job is a seed certification specialist. And also she came from a ranching family. So we started seeing these lateral applications for data that Rachel would bring. And then there was also another one with record management. And the person on the far right, Everett Codd, we brought him aboard over the summer. And Everett really understands the conventional to organic transition from farms. And there's a great blockchain use case for record management where we're able to, because we understand from connecting with farms firsthand how fragmented that can be. There's all these different types of auditors and they're looking for paper trails from farms and they all have their areas of expertise. So there's animal welfare certified, there's certified organic, there's kosher, there's all these different things, and there's all these different entities. But do you know what doesn't change? The farm and their data. They do a heck of a lot of duplication of efforts that is really benefited by the columnization of data via blockchain. I'll add another thing, and this is straight from Everett that we found out for the lateral use cases. When you're going from conventional to organic, forgive me, I'm gonna read this quote, but in an organic system plan, all field activities need to be documented. This can be cultivation, planting, application of inputs, or harvesting. There are also clean-out logs, equipment maintenance logs, non-farm, wildlife habitat, water quality assessment, and facilities maintenance. It has to not only be documented, but annually audited and maintained for 5 years. There's a great use case for blockchain. I mean, there's mistrust. There's the need to centralize data. So what we really found over the summer, well, while Dan plugged away working on blockchain and while we collected data, we worked on our lateral applications. So with Rachel, we came up with an application with blockchain for industrial hemp seed. We all see hemp seed just going through the roof as far as farms converting over and planting it, because it's very, very profitable. And in 2020, they'll be able to have insurance for the first time due to the farm bill. But there, anytime you're going to get this much action, you're also going to get fraud. This just happened yesterday, or I got the article yesterday, a couple of days ago, where one of our own Oregon-based hemp seed suppliers is being sued for $44 million. Why? Because he sold them a bunch of male hemp seed. Or this is what's accused. Because we're seeing this gigantic uptick in hemp seed, you just have a higher demand for that stock, and the quality and the is really something where there is mistrust and mistrust for a good reason. there's a lot of people entering there. So right now we've got a project underway where we're working with Oregon State University to leverage Rachel's experience in seed certification and hemp. Oh, I'm sorry, went too fast. And then lastly, I'll just mention this really quick, is the last use case would be for water rights. And that is both for the private and the farms themselves. I believe there's someone on here from Miami that enjoys working on water rights, and I do too. My brother-in-law works for the Oregon Bureau of Land Management, specifically in water rights. He works in GIS. So water rights are contentious. This kind of comes back to climate change, but that situation is only going to be exacerbated. And we're going to care a lot more about water rights. And if you farm or talk to people actually on a farm, everyone's going to point their finger at the other person saying they're drawing water that they shouldn't. I'm just saying that, right? That's real. And you find out those really good lateral applications, I believe, when you're down there talking to people and looking and doing that type of work. So why blockchain now? I don't know about the rest of you, but I get pushback all the time, especially from my data colleagues that think I'm gilding the lily, putting my data on blockchain, everything else. And they're wrong. And I give a couple of different incidents between the market, and that's the market between smaller or institutions wanting to buy more local and caring about provenance, which I give the example with Eugene. So there's a logistical data need for blockchain there. If you believe that anything is going to happen with a Democratic candidate that is going to make an impact on climate change, well, then we're going to have to be talking about soil. And if we're talking about that, we're going to be talking about data to back that up. And there's going to be a need for data in blockchain due to the trustability with it, because there's going to be money on the line. I mean, this is a prediction. I could be wrong, but I believe that we'll be using blockchain to reward farmers in the United States according to carbon sequestration and other positive things for the environment. And that's going to demand it having that data on blockchain. And then lastly, the technology. I have a thing for Uber Eats. I should change it out and put Uber Freight, because Uber Freight is important for all of us that are working logistics. And I don't know if you're competing with Uber Freight, but Uber Freight is changing the game. And I say that from talking to people that are small to medium-sized farmers and having the ability to work outside of farm distributors. As soon as me, you, and someone else has enough to hit that quantity to sell to a bigger entity, we can all of a sudden organize our Uber Freight. And for those small farms, I should also mention Amazon's entree into the logistics business, where they now have franchisees. That is really interesting. I'd be happy to talk to you more offline about what Amazon is doing, but you can use Amazon just like you use FedEx now, where we can do a peer-to-peer transaction, and it's going to go onto an Amazon van with a smile on it from my house to yours. So that is going to continue to change things for farms, and Amazon is going to push on that as well. All right, so where are we now? Hey, here's a nice bit of market validation from the media, and we got a lot of nice emails from people saying, hey, we like your project and it's nice to use. I just released a beta version of this about a month or two ago and people enjoyed it. And the most important thing was I got feedback from the communities that would use it, like the Canon community. People from the Canon community said, hey, it was hard to understand where I could find, you know, 200 pounds of Roma tomatoes that were locally, and I can dig up all the farms and filter on that. And that was wonderful because that allows me to market more to their niche. So that was nice to get the media validation and some interest from the public. And where are we today? Well, our site is officially launching as of today, October 1st. Give me a shout out on social media and share with friends the blog post if you can on LinkedIn and all that stuff. And I'll be putting new farms on throughout the day. We're just hung up on their filter right now, but we'll have Miami and New York City and a lot of the other big cities out there on it. We'll be adding farms, continue adding them through our vetting process, and by November 1st, we'll have 2,500 farms on there. So we have a bunch of farms that we like to check with them and make sure that we can put their data online first. So we go through that process and let them know that we found them and everything else. And lastly, our data is mirrored in Hyperledger Sawtooth, and we're looking for interested collaborative partners, you know, people that also want to work on these types of use cases that I mentioned. And backtracking a little bit, as you can see from this presentation, we've done a lot of work on use cases. I just haven't contributed to our community really on that, and that's only because I'm just hung up with other events. I'm the only one who works on this project full time. Everyone else works on it part time, and they're still awesome. But so that's why I haven't added that stuff to the white papers. But we have a lot of things that are active. A few of them really in the mix with Oregon State University. And I just want to mention one other thing, if I can get out of here, was another great use for Lindsay. I believe that you mentioned a group with people of color in coding. And something that's really interesting that I came across over the past year or so is, of course, blockchain is great for record keeping. African Americans have been outside of official record keeping, and it's been negative. So are you aware of this stuff?
Yep.
Okay.
track it very, very closely. I gave a lecture to the Morgan State faculty around like the blockchain use cases. But this particular area didn't come up, but I would love to really learn more about the work you're doing specifically with them.
Great. Yeah, so I'd be happy to. And that was great to hear your interest in that. So that's where we are. We're gonna have this project out on Sawtooth, and I'll ask people to start connecting with me on that. There's a former Intel engineer named Soren Anderson who gives me a big hand on all this stuff, and a lot of people I have to thank for helping us get to this point. But I'm just a regular data person who saw a data set that I thought should be created. And due to where the market was going and the federal government was going and simply the data format, I had to adjust the blockchain, and that's what I did. So that is my tale for us. I'm happy to take questions or comments or anything like that.
Hey, Jim, we're actually 2 minutes cutting into 11. We actually have a hard time at 11. So if it's possible, if anyone's interested, feel free to reach out to Jim on any questions that you have. And I believe he has his email right over there. Apologies. I just want to make sure that we are on track at the time.
Yeah. It's jim@allthefarms.com. And you can probably find it through our wiki or something as well.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.